I want to discuss, if we have time, two mitzvahs tonight. I hope we'll get to both of them. Both of them are mitzvahs, they are prohibitions that you probably will never have the opportunity to transgress, actually. And therefore, there's more of a reason even to learn about them, because by learning about them, that's how you fulfill them. Okay. They both have to do with the Mishkan, one with the Aron and one with the Choshen and the Ephod. Even when there was a Beis HaMikdash, and there will be a Beis HaMikdash, you probably will not ever have a chance, none of us, to be over this issue. Okay? The first one I want to speak about is from last week's Sedra, and then go 2 weeks ago Sedra. And that is that you're not allowed to move the Choshen from off the Ephod. The Choshen and the Ephod have to be connected, and there's a special prohibition in the Torah of removing the Choshen from the Ephod. We'll discuss halachically what that means in a second. But the ideas behind it, I think, are very relevant ideas, like by all mitzvahs. And the same thing, the other one is not removing the poles, the staves, the carrying poles from the Aron. Okay, again, this is one mitzvah that you probably will never transgress, two of them, but the ideas behind them, I think, are very very interesting. Okay, let's go and speak, first of all, of technically, what does this prohibition include? The Rambam, well, first let's give a description of the two, the Begadim, the Ephod and the Choshen, so you'll have an idea of what we're talking about. The Ephod, basically, okay, even though there are different opinions, but this is what Rashi says. The Ephod was basically like an apron that covered the back of the Kohen from his waist down and had straps in the back that went over his shoulders. Okay? That was what the Ephod looked like. It had golden rings. It had, what's it called? First of all, two stones in on the shoulders that had six of the tribes engraved on one stone, names of the six of the tribes on the other stone. Okay, and there were rings, golden rings, on the shoulder straps, and golden rings on the cheshev ephod. The cheshev ephod was a sash that was woven together with the apron, wasn't separate, wasn't even sewn on, it was woven together with the apron, that was called cheshev ephod. And in the front, on the cheshev or ephod, there are also two golden rings, no questions. Now on the, what?
The second temple, did they have the same apron?
Yes. Same thing. And the, what's it called? Now on the golden rings on the top, on the shoulders, there were chains, golden chains that were connected to the choshen. The choshen was a breastplate. Okay, it was a garment that went over the chest of the Kohen, and it had 12 stones on it. Each stone had a name of a different tribe, plus some other letters on it, and that had inside it the Urim, the Tumim, special names of God, that prophetically the letters lit up in the eyes of the Kohen and formed themselves into words when questions were asked, and that's one of the ways that God communicated with the Jewish people through the Kohen, the Urim, the Tumim. That came through the breastplate. So we have, here's pictures, okay. So here is the shoulder straps of the ephod with the two stones. Here are the rings. Here's the chain, the rings on top of the choshen, and the, what's it called, these chains held the choshen in place on the. Now there also were two rings down here. Yeah, there were also two rings on the bottom part of the choshen, and two rings on the sash. And these blue woolen cords connected the bottom of the choshen to the sash of the apron. Okay, this is the back. See those shoulder straps, the back is the apron, and here you see the front, you see the two strings that are connected to the sash, and the two, chains that connect the choshen to the top of the ephod. So the choshen was connected bottom and top to the ephod, with chains on the top, with blue woolen cords on the bottom, and there was a prohibition. Now the Rambam learns the prohibition is that you're never allowed to separate in a destructive way the chains that connect the top of the choshen to the straps of the ephod. You can't, what's it called? Those were always to be in place, and if you pull them apart destructively, you transgress this prohibition. Therefore, it had nothing to do with the wearing of the garment. It had to do with the actual form of the garment itself. Even though these were two separate garments, the apron and the choshen, but they were made in such a way that they were always to be connected, at least on the top. So when the Kohen wore them, he put them on, what's it called, connected, and then he connected the bottom by the sash. No questions. We're not going to finish. Please. That's it. No questions, okay? In the end, I'll leave time for questions after we finish. Okay. So that's what how the Rambam learns. And he also learns it's only if you separate them destructively. But if you separate them in order to fix them or something, you don't transgress this prohibition. It's only to wantonly take these two garments that were made as one and rip them apart. Okay. The Minchas Chinuch says it seems to be reasonable, even though he says that you can't rely on this halachically, that even according to the Rambam, it would only be prohibited in a chosh and an ephod that were wearable. But if they were not wearable, they were worn out or whatever, right? Since the whole idea is that these clothing that are going to be worn have to have their form. If they're not going to be worn at all, they can't be worn, then it's no problem. Even though the Rambam learns it's even the prohibition is even when you're not wearing it, but it's only a chosh and an ephod that could be worn. That's the Rambam. The Sefer HaChinuch learns differently. He learns that the prohibition is during the wearing of the ephod. When the Kohen is wearing the choshen and the ephod, okay, and he has to tie the blue cords at the bottom to hold it tight, right, taut against his chest so it doesn't move back and forth, the prohibition is not tightening those cords enough so the choshen is loose and moves on the ephod. So according to the Rambam, it's only separating them completely. According to and it's even when they're not being worn. And it's the top chains that the problem is. According to the Chinuch, it's not the top chains that are the problem, it's the making sure that when you wear the ephod, you wear it tightly against the choshen, tightly against the ephod, and don't let it move back and forth. Okay. There are some that say, and therefore it's only when you're wearing it, because obviously when you have to take it off, you have to remove those things, otherwise you can't get it off. So it's only a prohibition, it's not a halacha in the clothing itself, it's a halacha in how you wear the clothing. It should be worn in a tight way where the choshen doesn't move over the ephod. There are those that say that really both are true, that when you're wearing it, the halacha is like the chinuch, and even when you're not wearing it, if you separate the top, you transgress another prohibition. But each one mentions one part. Okay. There is a sheet of Reb Sadia Gaon who says that you don't transgress any prohibition. It's just that the Torah says this is the way it should be. Right? You should fasten it so it shouldn't move around. But not that you have a transgression if you do that, which is really very difficult to understand in light of Gemaras that seem to say clearly not like that, but Reb Sadia Gaon does not count this as one of the prohibitions. Okay. Now, that's the mechanics. That's the prohibition. What does it mean? What are the ideas behind it? So the Gemara says very clearly here that each of the Bigdei Kohuna were atoned for different sins. The ephod atoned for idolatry, and the choshen atoned for injustice, specifically injustice between man and man, dinim. So the Sefer HaAkedas Yitzchak was a Rishon. He says like this. He says that why does the ephod atone for idolatry. Says the ephod is very similar to what idolaters used to wear. They used to wear an apron like this. Okay. And not only that, the apron itself was idolatrous in many situations. So Torah wanted to tell you the following. It wanted to make fun of the idolatry. So it took what normally is worn by idolaters as a garment of honor, right, and in itself then becomes idolatrous, and it made it an apron that covers the backside of the person. As if to say, we are, the idolatry in our eyes is worth to cover the backside. Okay? And in addition, it was connected to the Urim V'Tumim, where God connected himself to the Jewish people to show that all the powers of idolatry that are represented by this ephod, all their powers emanate from God. Right? They're all connected to God. So what are you serving idolatry as an independent power? They have no independent power. Their power only comes from God. So the idea of not separating the ephod from the choshen teaches me this idea. The ephod shows the total futility of Avodah Zarah. It's not an honorable thing. It's something that's fit for putting the backside behind your waist, and it has no power in itself. It's all emanates from God's power, which is represented by the choshen. Okay. That's pretty much what the Akedas Yitzchak says. The Alshich says, and we're going to expand this idea now, the Alshich says that the Avnei Shoham, the stones on the shoulders of the Kohen, represented the Shnei Luchos HaBris. They were like the two tablets of stone which the Aseres HaDibros were written on. Five on one tablet, five on the other. The names of the Jewish people are on one, names of the Jewish people on the other. And it also represents the unity of the Jewish people under God, right? That the Jewish people are unified in their unifying God. That's what unifies the Jewish people, okay? And the Torah represents unifying God, and the fact that, what's it called, there are two luchos. And the concept, I think, is the following, that there are many different things in this world, right? The two luchos look like they're two, but really they're one unity. The Jewish people also are many tribes, but they all unify under God, just like the two luchos represent heaven and earth and all different kinds of dual things, but all those dual things have their unity under God. They're not separate things. The Jewish people also are separate tribes, but they have their unity under the Ribbono Shel Olam. Okay? And I think that the shoulders represent that, because the shoulders are extensions of the hands and arms, five fingers on each hand, right? It's like the Aseres HaDibros, five and five. And then it gets connected into two arms, but as you follow it up, it all becomes one on the shoulders, all one. So it represents this concept that even though we have things that appear to be separate, but ultimately they all emanate from the same unity. So the two stones on the shoulders of the Kohen represent the two Luchos HaBris, which represents the unity of many different things from God's side. God gave us a lot of mitzvahs that are all unified, and we unify God from our side, and that unifies the Jewish people. Okay, that's more or less the intent of the Alshich. Now, it's interesting also that others say, the Kli Yakar and others, that the Avnei Shoham, therefore, the word Shoham has the same letters as Moshe, and also as Hashem. And also, they say that the Avnei Shoham not only represented the Luchos, they were an atonement for the breaking of the Luchos, which Moshe did, for the sake of Hashem. So, and the idea being that the antithesis of that unity is when the Jewish people are not unified under God and they serve idolatry. And by the Chet HaEgel, it says they didn't serve one God. Each one had his own little God. Idolatry is the total disunity of the Jewish people, everybody doing what they want, everybody doing their own thing. And because idolatry is all the different powers of the world, there's no unity. all different powers. And therefore, whoever believes in the Torah basically denies idolatry. And if you believe in idolatry, you deny the Torah. The Torah is the ultimate unifier. Idolatry is the ultimate disunifier. And therefore, we find a connection between Torah and Lashon Hara. Torah equals all the mitzvahs, and Lashon Hara does, because Torah is unifying, Lashon Hara is separating. Okay, now, so that's what the ephod and the two stones represent, this unity of the Jewish people by unifying God. Okay, it's the unity that comes because we, between man and God, we are unified under God. That unifies us. The Jewish people are unified because we're unified under God. That's one kind of unity of the Jewish people. The Choshen represents dinim, the social status of the Jewish people one to each other. Okay? And that also represents the unity of the Jewish people, but the unity between each other. It doesn't go through God and then we become unified. It goes man to man. So one is the unity between man and God, one is the unity between man and man, and therefore it's on the heart of the Kohen. The first one is a more intellectual unity. We unify God, and in that way we all become one because we're all unified under the Rabbanu Shalom. That's an intellectual thing. The other one is more of a feeling. Deal with your neighbor justly. Have a love for him or whatever. That's more of an emotional feeling. That's on the heart of the Kohen. Okay, therefore, I think the symbolism based on all of this is that you can't separate between these two unities. You can't have a Jewish people unified together if they're not unified under God. Unity, in other words, nationalism, is only important if it has the unity of the Rabbanu Shalom too. But if the Jewish people are unified, but they're not unified under God, right? They're just friendly one to the other, that kind of unity is, to a certain degree, meaningless. The opposite is also true. You can't have unity under God intellectually if the Jewish people aren't unified one to the other. So you need the unity between man and man and the unity between man and God for either of them to be significant. Both of them have to go together. So you can never separate the Choshen from the Ephod because you need both of these kinds of unity. That, I think, is one. The Kliyakar adds another dimension to this. He says that there's something that the Ephod and the Choshen have in common. Both of them are things that are dependent on the heart. Right? Dinim depend on the heart. Right? A lot of whether you're doing justice or injustice depends on your intention. It's Dvarim HaMesurim L'Lev. And the same thing goes for what's it called unity of God depends on your heart. Depends what your intention is. Okay, your intention in your heart. If you don't believe in God, you could say whatever you want. Shema Yisrael. If you don't really believe it inside, so it's empty words. So both of them are Mesurim L'Lev. Now, basically, the heart is the place of unity, because physically we are all separate. So it's only in the heart that Jews are united one to the other. That's why the prohibition of hating another Jew is in your heart. Because if you hate him externally, physically, it's not so terrible, because anyway we're separate. Hate means separation, as love means connection, unity. So if you hate another Jew, and you yell at him, you hit him, so you transgress prohibitions. But it's not that devastating, because it's all external, and externally we're separate anyway. But if you hate him in your heart, that's where there could really be unity, between the hearts. We're all one heart. Then it's a terrible prohibition because you're separating the hearts. So unity is dependent on the heart. Also, the unity from Jew to God is, and through the Torah, is heart. Why? We receive the Torah, ke'ish echad, belev echad, with one heart. So the unity of the Jewish people under God is dependent on the heart, and the unity of Jew to Jew is dependent on the heart, and therefore these two concepts, unity between man and God, unity between man and man, right, both have that heart as their basis, and therefore you can't separate between the Choshen and the Ephod. These two things must go together. That's one idea. Hasham Shofal Hirsch says another idea. He says that the ephod hints to action. Okay? It's worn on his body, mobility, the legs, the straps, the arms, hands, that's action. It also has a sash, which is called cheshev ha'ephod, which represents thought. So we have thought, action, mobility, all of that is represented by the ephod. On the other hand, the koshen represents the word of God, the Urim v'Tumim. That's where God communicates through the koshen. So we have to understand that all our actions and thoughts have to be directed towards God, and all our actions and thoughts have to be directed by God. They have to have God as their goal, and God as their guide. That's what Rav Shammai Shofar Hirsch says, and therefore we don't separate the Choshen from the Eifel. They must go together. Okay. The Degel Machne Ephraim says a nice Hasidish pshat. He says that the word Eifod is the same numerical value as Peh. The Aleph and the Dalet become a Hey, and you're left with the Peh Hey. And the Choshen is on the heart. So he says the lesson is, make sure your heart and your mouth are never separated. That you say what you mean, and you mean what you say, right? And pi velibo shavim, not to be a hypocrite, and a faker who says what he's not thinking, or thinks what he's not saying. Okay. In other words, don't be a politician. The Tamei HaMitzvos, Sefer, says an interesting another thing. He says, since the Choshen hints to judgment, to justice, so it also hints to judges. The Gemara says, whoever appoints an unfit, unqualified judge is as if he plants a tree for idolatry. So, because it looks nice, right near the Mizbeach, it looks like you're making a nice thing, looks like a nice judge, but he's really unqualified. So it's almost like idolatry. So he says that's the connection. The ephod is an atonement for idolatry. The choshen is an atonement for injustice. But injustice and idolatry go together. Because having an unqualified judge, which will cause injustice, is mamish like idolatry. So you can't separate the choshen, which is injustice, from the ephod, which is idolatry. Rav Moshe Feinstein says another idea, similar, not that similar, but another idea that's along the same lines. He says that when a person transgresses monetary prohibitions, he commits an injustice, steals, cheats, lies, and so on, then the root of his sin is not just between man and man, but between man and God. Because if you really believe that God controlled the world and he provided everybody with what they need, then you couldn't steal, cheat, lie, right? Why would you want to do that? God is the one who provides. It must be that when you transgress these prohibitions, you're really thinking deep down that you're the one in control. If you steal, you'll become richer and you'll be more successful. If you lie, you cheat. So, obviously, you're putting your trust in the money and in yourself. That's idolatry. So you can't separate between sins, between man and man, monetary sins, and the sin of idolatry, because they really have to go hand in hand. The Sefer Nachlas Binyamin says an interesting idea. It says when they would ask the questions of the Urim v'Tumim, so the letters would light up, and others' letters would, like, disappear. So the Kohen would see only those letters that were significant. Comes out that sometimes some of the letters of the names of Jewish people would, like, not be operable. They'd be disappeared, right, in the eyes of the Kohen, at least. And God forbid, if any of the Jewish people disappear, the world can't exist. So in order to compensate for that, they had the names of the Shvatim on his shoulders, and they never disappeared. They were always there. But if they weren't connected to the Choshen, they would have no connection. So therefore, when the letters disappeared on the Choshen, there was a backup of letters on the shoulders, right? So therefore, what's it called? That backup had to be connected to the ephod, to the Choshen, so it was considered a backup, right? So you didn't lose the file when the letters disappeared. You had a backup on the shoulders. Okay. I was thinking of another idea. and this is the last one, then we'll go to the next thing, and that is the following. I think that the Kohen, okay, has responsibility to the Jewish people. He is an agent of the Jewish people. He's an agent of God. He represents the Jewish people to God. He represents God to the Jewish people. He has a responsibility to unite us. Like we said before, the fact that he has the names of the Jewish people on his shoulders shows unity of the Jewish people to God. But it's the Kohen who creates that unity. His job is to unite us, to be the representative of all the Jewish people and unite us towards the Ribbono Shel Olam. And he only can really do his job well if he makes sure that all Jews are united. Right, then he can represent all of us to the Ribbono Shel Olam. If the Jews aren't united, he's not representing all of us to God. So he's not doing his responsibility. So he carries, literally, the names of the Jewish people on his shoulders. He shoulders that responsibility to make the Jews unite. But there's also a benefit to the Kohen. The Kohen benefits that by representing the united Jewish people, he gets the schus of Klal Yisrael, and because of that, God uses him as the medium to communicate with Klal Yisrael. So he gets a benefit. Right? He has a achrayus, a responsibility to carry the unity of the Jewish people on his shoulders. He also has the benefit of having the unity of the Jewish people on his heart, right? And gives him the benefit of having that closer relationship to God. And the lesson is, you can't separate between benefit and responsibility. If you have benefits, there has to be responsibilities. If you have responsibilities, there are going to be benefits. You can't separate between the Choshen, which represents the benefit the Kohen has from the unity of the Jewish people, and the Eifold, which represents the responsibility the Kohen has in unifying the Jewish people. Both of them have to go together.